from Turtle Island to Palestine. Occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
John Timon, I'm Irish and I'm here today outside the French Embassy in London campaigning on behalf of the French comrades in France who are in court today for calling for the boycott of divestment and sanctions against Israel. That's the only place in the world this is a crime is in Israel, or is in Paris, sorry, and France, and that's where we're calling for all the charges to be dropped against our French comrades. Thank you.
My name is Virginia Timon, I'm Italian. And I'm here to support our comrades, French comrades, BDS, protesters, who are today on trial in court in France. And best of luck and vivra Palestine d'Etat.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Hello, my name is Alberto. We are here to stand in solidarity with our French comrades, which have been speaking against racism and against apartheid in France. We are outraged that protesting against racism and for boycotting Israel can be labeled as a crime in France. So we demand the French government to free our French comrades, and we stand in full solidarity with French comrades, free Palestine.
Okay, my name's Caroline O'Reilly. I come from Brighton. I've been involved with Palestinian solidarity movement for many years. And I'm here to be in solidarity with the French group who we met in the summer. We were involved in a tour in the summer with them. So we are very concerned about them, this constant harassment by the French government. So that's why.
Good morning and welcome. You're listening to Under the Olive Tree on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. My name is Sausan Kadura and I will be your host for today. And as usual, the lovely Catherine Garvin helped me prepare for today's show. So at the beginning of the show, we were listening to a group of Palestine solidarity activists who were protesting last Wednesday on October 30th in front of the French embassy in London. These activists were gathered to express solidarity and showing their support to four BDS French activists who were supposed to appear in front of the court in Paris on that same day. So these French activists are being brought to trial because they are basically advocating for BDS and calling for the boycott of Israel. The excuse given for bringing these activists to court is that the first excuse is that the boycott call is a hate crime. And the other excuse or argument they use is that calling for boycott hinders the economic interest in France. So as weird as this may sound, the case of these four BDS activists is not actually the only case in France. BDS activists in France have been the target of these trials for a few years now. Just last August, for example, a court in Perpignan found three pro-Palestinian activists not guilty of discrimination and hate crimes. So this outcome is actually most of the time the outcome of these trials. So far, the BDS and Palestine Solidarity activists won all the cases against them eventually. But unfortunately, this is not stopping this continuous attempts or harassment or attempts to intimidate them and silence them through the courts. But as we hear the news always coming from France, despite all these efforts, the BDS is still very active in France, and they are constantly working on new campaigns, and many of these campaigns are very successful. So in light of all these events, today we will focus on BDS. BDS, again, is the boycott, divestment and sanction call against Israeli apartheid. So we'll talk more about it. We will also focus on BDS activism in France in particular, maybe try to understand the climate there and for the BDS activists, and what or who is behind these random trials against these activists. We will also talk about the EU new guidelines they were introduced in July, which many considered as a kind of form of a major EU boycott against Israeli settlements, because these guidelines basically stated that all agreements from now on between the EU and Israel must explicitly exclude all territories colonized or occupied in 1967. So this includes obviously West Bank, but also includes East Jerusalem and the Golan Heights in Syria. So, as I said, many saw this as a form of an EU boycott of the settlements and the colonies. So we'll talk more about that as well, and more specifically about a new European plan called the Horizon 2020, which is a new EU funding program that usually includes Israel. And this program is raising controversy, and it's interesting to discuss it because many now are wondering, with the release of these new explicit guidelines against Israeli occupation, how much the EU will actually implement them when it comes to the Horizon 2020. If applied, this if these guidelines apply, this will be a major blow to Israel. Israel is already threatening to leave the program if the EU apply these guidelines. And of course, as usual, the US with France are putting pressure on the EU to kind of ignore their guidelines for human rights and basically give a pass to Israel. So we will talk about all this very interesting topic throughout the show. And to discuss them, we had with us yesterday Dror Warshawski. Dror is a BDS activist based in France. He has been active in the Palestine Solidarity Movement for many years now, and specifically in the BDS movement. So with him, we discussed all these subjects. We talked about the BDS, we talked about BDS in France, and also the EU new guidelines and the repercussions it will have on Israel if they are actually for once applied. So I will start by playing the first part of this interview, and we will be back. Stay tuned on Under the Olive Tree. I have with me in studio today Dror Warshawski. Dror is a Palestine solidarity activist based in France. He is highly involved in the BDS France movement in particular. So Dror is right now in Montreal for a few days, only on a brief visit. So we are very lucky today to have him with us in studio. We will mainly discuss issues and topics related to BDS, especially related to BDS activism in France in particular. So before we start, Dror, I'd like to thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
So before, as I said, we're going to talk about BDS France. But before that, can you give us a little bit of background about the BDS movement in general? What is it? What is that movement?
Sure. BDS is a strategy of action for solidarity with Palestine around the world. And it's an answer to a call put forward by Palestinians themselves. It started in 2005. The appeal, and then several countries took on. Actually, Montreal was one of the first cities to answer this call and to put BDS in practice. So what the Palestinians are asking is to put pressure on the Israeli government and also on our own Western world countries' government so that Israel enforces the international law. So there are three main demands. Equality between citizens in Israel-Palestine, between citizens, Palestinians and Jewish citizens. The right of refugee to return to their country, Palestinian refugees. And, of course, the end of occupation of all occupied lands, the tearing down the wall, the Gaza blockade, and all the territories from the Golan, Jerusalem, West Bank, Gaza, of course. The strategy is BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanction. So it's a wide range of action that anybody as a citizen can help to contribute. Boycott as an individual, you decide to boycott every product that either is Israeli made or collaborates to the occupation through sometimes European or American or Canadian mm-hmm. companies that collaborate with the Israeli government and occupation. Divestment, so asking companies to divest from whatever investment they had in Israel. Mm-hmm. So that's usually for Western companies. And sanctions, that's what states should do, to put sanctions on Israel until it complies with the international law. And actually, it goes BDS, but if the sanctions were applied, then probably boycott and divestment mm-hmm. would be useless or not necessary. But since no state applies, no states applies any sanctions, then we as citizens have to mm-hmm. to take other measures.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah. And I want to ask you, because since it didn't start too long ago, if you think about it, but it has achieved a lot, and it seems that it's given a lot of hope also for Palestine Solidarity activists. Why do you think this has been such a great practical tool for BDS activism or Palestine activism in general?
It's hard to say. It seems to me that the Palestine Solidarity really depends on what goes on in the news. It's usually pretty depressing what's going on there. And sadly, the more depressing news we get from Palestine, the more... Well, probably not enough, but the more solidarity people want to express and want to act. And I think BDS, even though it started in 2005, at least in France, it definitely started after the Gaza massacre in mm-hmm. the beginning of 2009. Because people were shocked and people kept saying, we have to do something. And okay, we can demonstrate, we can sign petitions, we can be angry. But BDS at that point became something obvious that anybody could do. And we quite quickly saw practical consequences. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, you know, people often say, oh, but if you boycott Israel, you're going to harm the Palestinians, you're going to harm the Israeli citizens, you're going to harm the economy. And this, of course, is not true. I mean, at least we never saw that happening, because BDS is not that efficient, maybe, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We don't harm anybody. What we harm is the reputation. Mm-hmm. And this, we saw pretty quickly that Israelis were annoyed. They started by trying to ignore us, but pretty quickly they saw that BDS was very efficient at getting media coverage. And now, of course, the problem is that we get counterattack from Israeli propaganda, but mm-hmm. at least it proves that we are doing the right thing. We're mm-hmm. pushing on the right button. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess that's why people are getting involved, because they see the efficiency or relative efficiency, at least from an international solidarity point mm-hmm. of view. When we can't do much on the ground, we can at least put pressure on our politicians, our companies, and, mm-hmm. and our artists too, mm-hmm. because there's also a cultural boycott, our professors, mm-hmm. teachers, because there's also academic boycott. That's the beauty of BDS, and maybe the reason why it's working pretty well is that, as I was saying, anybody can get involved in BDS mm-hmm. within their own job, occupation, or passion, or mm-hmm. and so it's a citizen action, and it's quite easy to put your daily life in tune with your political in mm-hmm. ideas. So it's nice in this way.
As I said, you are based in France. You're active in France, and you were talking about the image of Israel. Can you talk to us a little bit about how much the French public is aware about what is happening in Palestine, how much there's awareness about the Palestinian struggle there?
France has a long history politics involved with Israel and Palestine. So actually on both sides, there's a large Jewish community that is often, even though there's Jews on both sides, but there's a large Jewish community that is very Zionist. And so there's a lot of Israeli propaganda in the French media. But there's also a long history of Palestine solidarity in France, from unions, from intellectuals, from artists, and also from part of the Jewish communities that is working for Palestine. So Palestine is in the news a lot in France. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, as everywhere else, I feel that the media coverage of Palestine is often leaning towards the Zionist description of what's going on. But there is a larger community that, and we can see it in the BDS campaign. There's an echo. A lot of people understand what we're saying, and they don't buy what they read in the press. And they're, I mean, you've probably read this poll, the world poll in the world. Israel is one of the less popular countries. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't buy what they read, and they know that what the Israeli government does is really awful, and it's true too in France. To some extent, so the
how bad the media, how bad, because here in North America we talk about how bad the media and the mainstream media is. Canada and of course the US is another case. How bad is it in France? Is there some criticism given to Israel, or is it really as much as it is in Canada?
There is some criticism. I feel that it's pretty bad, and the media in France. But if they want to be believable, they have to open at least, I don't know, 5-10% of their pages to people opposing the Israeli politics. And actually, that was also one of the targets of the French BDS campaign that we met to some extent, was to get access to large media. So they wouldn't... really buy our arguments, but they would let us express it through letters to the editors or things like mm-hmm. that. So we got a couple of articles in major newspapers.
So have some space in this.
There is some space. Yeah. There is some space.
So as you said, there's a lot of activism in France for Palestine. Now we keep hearing this news about BDS activists in particular being taken to trial. We know on October 30th, there's four French BDS activists who were supposed to appear in front of the court. And this is part of a trial taking place against them. Can you, and this, as bizarre as this sounds, is not the only case. It's been happening for a few years now in France in particular. Can you talk to us about these trials?
Yeah, this is really, unfortunately, this is taking a lot of our time, a lot of our energy, and some of our money too. This is a strategy that the Zionist group took after BDS started because they found that BDS was getting efficient, so they thought, what could they do to stop us? And they sued us. And I want to say a couple of things, because I've talked about it with friends from other countries, and people say, oh, it must be hard in France because boycott is illegal. No, that's not true. That's what these people are trying to say. But boycott is not illegal in France. So mm-hmm. whenever they sue us, it's a long process, but in the end, we always win, because boycott is freedom of expression, and they try to prove that what we do is racist or discriminatory, or even sometimes they have to just say, okay, obviously it's not racist, but you're preventing the normal course of the economy, so that's bad, and that you should be sued for that. So we, at every one of these trials, and I've read recently, I lost count, but somebody said there was 15 of them mm-hmm. in the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit less, but their appeals, every trials happen actually 2 or 3 times, because we win and then they appeal and we win again and they appeal again. So every one of those trials we won, but they appeal and we have to go to court again, and sometimes it's at the other end of France, and we, you know, take cars to go there to support our friends, and we waste a day of work because mm-hmm. it takes a day to go there, and we have a little demonstration in front of the court and we win, but 6 months later we have another case in another city in France mm-hmm. and it's a pain, to be honest. Even though it's a lot of energy, it's also good for us in a way, because every time there's a trial, there's a news coverage in the media, interviews, we get some space to mm-hmm. talk about BDS, and we don't only talk about the trial itself, but we mm-hmm. talk about those three demands, the refugees, the apartheid in Palestine, the occupation of lands, the Gaza blockade, and the more we talk about it, the better for us. But for the friends who are sued, it's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. You know, sometimes they win, but if they lose, it's thousands of euros that they have to pay. And, you know, we don't have that money. So, and we still have to pay for the lawyers, even though they're nice to us. It's still a couple hundreds or a thousand euros in the end. So it is a big problem, but, you know, we have to deal with it.
Yeah. I want to ask a question about the politicians in France. Like here we, in Canada at least, we talk about how much the politicians are very supportive of Israel, even more than they defend it even more than Israeli politicians. And there's a lot of sometimes attempts to put pressure on the Palestine solidarity activism. I think there was an accusation given to Israeli apartheid week of being anti-Semite by politicians. I want to talk about in France, because what I understood is that this whole trials also, I don't know if it started with that, but maybe it's... it was encouraged, let's say, by a memo, I think, that was sent by Michel Alliot-Marie, who is the previous Minister of Justice during Sarkozy. So can you talk to us about this memo and maybe give us an idea?
Yeah, this is a little complicated, but it is very important in the context of those trials. And it's also the bad news of the new government. We were hoping at least for this, and even this they didn't do. So the thing is, whenever somebody sues us for a boycott action, for example, you give leaflets in a supermarket saying don't buy Israeli product, and then we get sued for racism because of the boycott. In a normal case, the judge who receives the complaint, he's free to say, well, this doesn't make any sense. I'm not even doing anything. You know, I'm putting this on trash. This is a, you know, you can't file all the complaints. Some of the complaints are just ridiculed. So, and this would probably be the case in 90%, if not all cases of boycott, that the judge would say there's nothing to complain about. I mean, everybody has the right in France to give leaflets in front of a supermarket, unless, you know, you call for Nazism or something that. So Michèle Alliot-Marie, when she was the Minister of Justice of Nicolas Sarkozy, under pressure and official pressure of the CRIF, which is the Zionist Jewish movement in France, who was equating BDS or boycott and anti-Semitism, she put out this memo to all judges in France saying, whenever you receive a complaint related to boycott of Israel, you have the obligation to file the complaint. It doesn't mean, of course, that the Minister of Justice decide that the boycott person is guilty, but it means that the judge is not free of letting go.
Dismissing the case.
Oh, okay. And so out of those 15 cases, probably 14, if not 15 of them, would have been dismissed. But because of this memo, the judge has the obligation to continue. And if I understand well, the appeals is the same. Like if we win in court, the judge has the obligation to appeal. I don't know until when, because so far some of the cases have been appealed twice already because of this memo. And when the new government of François Hollande was elected and the new Minister of Justice, who is Christiane Taubira, who is probably the best minister we have in this government, which doesn't say as much since we have a lot of really terrible cases, but the least bad is Christiane Taubira. And so we were hoping for her not to say boycott is great, not to say all boycotters should be free, but at least to dismiss this memo so that judges are free to either sue us if they think it's worth it, or dismiss the case if they think it's not. And she didn't do it. So she claims she didn't do it because, as opposed to Michèle Alliot-Marie, she doesn't want to intervene in the judge's
private affair.
But by not doing it, she's letting the previous intervention take place. So it's really bad for us. We keep sending her letters. And the Palestine Solidarity Movement is divided in many organizations, including some that don't believe in BDS. But even they write to Christiane Taubira, ask her to remove this memo from Michèle Alliot-Marie.
So so you are, despite all of this, you obviously are still very active in the BDS movement. Can you talk to us a bit about campaigns you are involved in right now in the BDS movement in France?
Sure. There's as I was saying, there's many a diverse way of getting involved in BDS in the world and in France. And I'm not part of all those campaigns because, you know, everybody according to what they like or what they prefer, what they're good at. But for example, there's a strong campaign going on against Israeli agricultural product, mm-hmm. against Mehadrin, which is the company that imports product from Israel to France. Campaigns on sports, which is a very efficient campaign because it very popular. Very many people interested in sports are listening to our arguments that Israel is a country that should not be treated as any other country, since what they do to Palestinian sports people. So that's a campaign I'm not involved in, but I can see our mm-hmm. friends doing it, being very efficient. We have a campaign in France against a French company, the major French phone company called Orange, mm-hmm. That is a very large company, not only in France. They have Orange in Morocco, in Tunisia, in Egypt. And of course, I'm mentioning Arab countries on purpose, but they also have Orange in Belgium and mm-hmm. England. And they also have partnership with an Israeli company called Partner. And this company is particularly developed in the occupied territories, in the colonies, mm-hmm. in the West Bank. And they provide phone lines to settlers and to military people in mm-hmm. the West Bank. So we ask the French company to at least cease all collaboration with this Israeli company. I mean, divestment from Israel would be a second step, but at least stop collaborating with this Israeli company. Mm-hmm. And this is also a pretty efficient campaign because we decided to have postcards that every person who has a phone from this company can send a postcard to the head of the company mm-hmm. and tell them that they're unhappy with it. Mm-hmm. So it's just pressure, and they've already hundreds, if I think we printed thousands of postcards, so they're getting to thousands of postcards. And we have just started now. We met with people in Tunisia, and we just sent a couple of hundreds postcards to Tunisia so that mm-hmm. Tunisian customers of Orange Tunisia can say we're very unhappy to work with a company or to call with a company that is collaborating with Israel. Mm-hmm. And we believe, from what we've heard from Orange officials, that they are really afraid that this takes on in Arab countries, because, for example, Egypt is a huge market for Orange, mm-hmm. and more generally, the future of this company, in a very bad capitalistic way, is the Arab and African countries, and they want to be popular in those countries because mm-hmm. you know, the other companies could gain the market. So, well, logically, we're also trying to get in this market because they have more to lose. I mean, this collaboration with the Israeli company probably doesn't get them that much money. Mm-hmm. So either they do it for a political reason, mm-hmm. which is probably true. But if they do it for financial reason, then we're going to show us that it's their best interest to get out of Israel. Mm-hmm.
So we are listening to the first part of an interview we did yesterday with France-based BDS activist Dror Warshawski. We talked with Dror about the BDS in France and the many campaigns that are happening there. Before we continue and play the second part, where we're going to talk more about the BDS campaign in France and also about the EU, we're going to take a small break and we will listen to a hip-hop song called Hand in Hand. This song is a work collaboration between three different hip-hop groups from Gaza. The group's names are PR, the Palestinian rappers, Black Unit, and Watar Band. So again, the song name is Hand in Hand. Stay tuned on Under the Olive Tree.
زمان برتوي منها زي سارق بس بالاحلام بشوفها مر الحقيقه ضايق اتجمع علي حتى العربي متامر روحي عكفي فيها ارض بقلب كنت مهاجر تاريخي مشرد تاريخي لاجئ تاريخي نازح تاريخي حالم تاريخي اسير ولا تاريخي استشهد تاريخي دموع لام طفله شهور بس مهدد مقاسي شعوب عنهم شلل الشعب ومن راى خطاب لقائد عن سلام يعني مجزرة تأييد دولي للخطاب صارت مقبرة حريتي عالهامش بتمناها مش عالهامش تنحط بآمن بالعدالة وفي يشعب معاي بآمن بالسلام بالأمل اللي جاي بآمن بشعب اللي طالب كإنسان تقرير المصير ولا تحرير وطن اسمه فلسطين مانيش واحد بلا الغياب قريب بعيد عرضي مهما طال الوقت مش حنسى يوم حقي مش هأهدأ لخايف مرضي كلها ترجع كل أهل اللي عايشين برا بالمنفى حياتنا مثل الجمر بالكف لكني بحلم باليوم اللي يرجع فيه كل وطني هضلني واقف علشان مستقبل ابني هضلني واقف علشان وصية سيدي وستي حياة شعب ده المر والصعب 48 من يومها لليوم بس اللي بشوفه حرب اجى الوقت لتقرير المصير كلمة الشعب الموحد هي اللي بتحدد المصير شكرا لكل إنسان جمنا بالعالم امل بوجودها بحقنا في هذا الوطن فلسطين لإلنا مهما زورت الحقيقة مهما عدت بينا وبينكم هون سنين طويلة فلسطين حرة فلسطين حرة مانيش الوحدي هنا خدوة روح جاي
29/11 يوم التضامن العالمي مع الشعب الفلسطيني قضية فلسطين لم ولن تموت
CKUT, the McGill Sustainability Projects Fund, and Climate Justice Montreal invite you to join us for the third edition of the Under the Weather Lecture Series. This month's lecture will feature Charity Hicks of the East Michigan Environmental Action Council. She is a writer, researcher, healer, artist, grower, and organizer involved in environmental and food justice, urban agriculture, Africana culture, and restorative justice. Join us for a night of visionary organizing in an age of climate crisis. In the midst of neoliberal and ecological devastation, Detroit is a city in search of alternatives. Charity Hicks will share lessons about organizing for a transition to diverse, democratic, life-affirming, and earth-centered economies. Thursday, November 14th at 6:30 p.m. in the Adams Auditorium at McGill University. Admission is free and refreshments will be served thanks to Midnight Kitchen. Can't be there in person? Tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM from 7 to 8 p.m. for a live broadcast of the lecture. Charity Hicks on Thursday, November 14th at 6:30 p.m. in the Adams Auditorium. For more information, visit undertheweather.ckut.ca.
Pay your pledges to CKUT's 2013 annual funding drive. All pledges of $60 or more will be entered into a grand prize draw. Grand prizes include round-trip tickets for two on Via Rail between Montreal and Toronto, a year of beer from McLauzen Brewery, a pair of super passes for the 2014 Pop Montreal Festival, a Book Lovers prize pack with gift certificates from Drawn and Quarterly, Paragraph Bookstore, The Word, and Odyssey Bookstore, a Music Lovers prize pack with gift certificates from Death of Vinyl, Oblique, Cheap Thrills, Phenopolis, Sound Central, and Adam Hart. A Food Lovers prize pack with gift certificates from Green Panther, Simplement Delish Cupcakes, Cocoa Locale, Café Larter, Burritoville, Lola Rosa, and La Banquise. And a Film Lovers prize pack with two tickets to Cinéma de Parc, a festival pass to RIDM, five pairs of tickets to Images et Nations, and a 10-ticket pass to Cinémathèque Québécoise. To be included in the draw, pledges must be paid by Friday, November 29th, 5 p.m. The grand prize draw is on December 2nd.
Welcome back. You're listening to Under the Olive Tree. My name is Sausan Kadura, and I will be your I'm your host for today. So today we are talking about BDS and BDS activism in France in particular. Yesterday we had in studio with us Dror Varshansky. Dror is a BDS activist from France. He just visiting Montreal briefly, and we had the chance to talk to him. We already played the first part of the interview we had with him during the first part of of the show, and we already talked about BDS movement in general and BDS activism in France in particular. And also he talked to us about the harassment BDS activists in France are facing every day. He also started to talk to us about many of the campaigns, the BDS campaigns that are happening in France today. Now I'm going to continue playing the interview we did and play the second part of the interview with Dror. In this part, he will talk to us more specifically about the cultural boycott campaigns happening in France. And we will also talk about the new EU funding plan called Horizon 2020. We will discuss what will happen with this plan if the new EU guidelines that exclude settlements from any funding project or plan to Israel. So we will see, we'll talk about how these guidelines will affect the Horizon 2020 and the relationship with Israel. Stay tuned on Under the Olive Tree. We heard a lot of news about French artists or African artists based in France also boycotting Israel. And this is due a lot to the activism in France, BDS France. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Right. We also have a strong cultural boycott campaign. And, well, there's a strong cultural boycott campaign across the world. Mm-hmm. And actually, France, I can't say that France is really at the forefront of it. We've haven't been that lucky to convince French artists to cancel their shows in Israel. Although a couple of them did. Vanessa Paradis did. Mm-hmm. Mireille Mathieu did. But what we've been more lucky at is that many African artists live in France or live in France half of their time, and a lot of their fan base is in France. And so we also decided to write to those artists who are maybe not French, but spend a lot of their time in France. So African artists like Oumou Sangaré from Mali, mm-hmm. Salif Keita from Mali, also mm-hmm. Natasha Atlas from Egypt, even though she's more based in Belgium. But mm-hmm. anyway, French-speaking people, mm-hmm. and they're sensitive to our letters. And after writing to Oumou Sangaré and connecting with our friends in Mali and Senegal and writing to Salif Keita, and we're really, really happy that was a huge victory of this mm-hmm. year that Salif Keita canceled his show because he's really one of our heroes and his music is pretty involved politically, so it wouldn't make sense for us if he went to Israel. Mm-hmm. We were a little puzzled by the fact that Israel was inviting many African artist, and this is pretty new. I mean, we asked our Israeli friends, "Have you often seen Israeli African artists coming to Israel?" And they didn't. So, only in the past couple of years, Israel has been inviting many African artists, and we found out that this is not a coincidence, and this is very important to us because many people that are against the cultural boycott say you shouldn't mix culture and politics. You know, politics has its pros and cons, mm-hmm. but culture should be beyond that, mm-hmm. above that. You know, culture mm-hmm. is beautiful, songs is beautiful, it connects people, it's mm-hmm. it's positive, what you're doing is negative. But actually, we found out what we knew, but we found more and more evidence is that Israel is in the Israeli invitations to African artists is exactly correlated to the Israeli government mm-hmm. involvement in African politics and the collaboration with African countries, very dirty collaborations, by mm-hmm. the way, of course, armed trade, mm-hmm. Security of African government officials, including dictators. So because they want to be able to put forward their politics in Israel, in Africa, and we called it, or we're not the only one, but we call it Israfrique, mm-hmm. same thing as France-Afrique, the kind of dirty politics between Israel and Africa, or mm-hmm. French and Africa, mm-hmm. Has this cultural side that they also want to be popular by inviting mm-hmm. African artists. So for us, it makes even more sense to attack this collaborations between African artists and Israel, because mm-hmm. it is not just cultural, it is political mm-hmm. and it is dirty. And it's also very paradoxical because at the same time, there's many African immigrants in Israel for other reasons, for economic reasons, that are escaping the crisis in their countries. And they're treated really badly in Israel. They're treated badly by the government, by being arrested, kept in camps, and then expelled in illegally because they're expelled to countries that are not even their countries, but also racism in, mm-hmm. in Tel Aviv. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're horrible, mm-hmm. horrible videos that are available on YouTube of hate demonstrations, hate slogans. It's, I mean, of course, you know, you don't want to do the comparison, but you can't help, you know, seeing those racist slogans by Israeli Jews in Tel Aviv against black people. It's really, it reminds you of bad mm-hmm. bad memories.
I remember we covered on the show, I think in news I read on Mondo Weiss, about a very shady kind of a deal that Israel trying to make with many African countries, that basically the deal would be they give them back immigrants and in exchange they would give them weapon. It's very
it's crazy. It's Uganda and the crazy thing is Uganda agrees they will receive weapons from Israel at a low price. I mm-hmm. can't imagine how many millions that is, but and in exchange they will accept those African immigrants, even though those African immigrants are not from Uganda. So first of all, it's totally illegal. I mean, in international law it's terrible to expel people, but at least you're supposed to expel them to their own countries, yeah. not to a third country. And secondly, if Uganda agrees on that, it's probably not because they want to, you know, treat well those yeah. Immigrants that are coming back, that are poor, that are illegal immigrants, that are not even Ugandese. I don't believe they will welcome them with like breakfast.
Yeah, and they trade in with human lives.
Totally. I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
So I want to jump to finish all for the to the European Union. There's a new European funding plan called Horizon 2020, which is, I believe it's part of Europe 2020, which is basically a 10-year strategy that is proposed to enhance the economy of the European Union. So if I understand correctly, the Horizon 2020 is the funding part or the financial part of this plan. So I know now there's like a lot of controversy about it because it might be linked or might involve or include Israel. So can you talk to us more about this and why is it controversial that mm-hmm. it's linked to Israel?
So actually, the fact that it includes Israel is not even controversial, and it's not new. I mean, mm-hmm. the European funding extends for a long time to other countries that are not European, and Israel is not the only one, but it's the most problematic one, especially, first of all, because it's far from Europe. I mean, for example, Switzerland is in those countries, and technically, Switzerland is not part of Europe, but mm-hmm. it's really a European country. Mm-hmm. And the controversy started not so much because Israel is included in Horizon 2020, because it always was, but because the European Commission has decided that for Israel or any other country, actually, to be part of Horizon 2020, it has to comply with international law. That was always the case, but mm-hmm. they wanted to rephrase it, and they said specifically, we remind Israel that the occupied territories of 1967, so mostly the West Bank, is not included in this treaty. Mm-hmm. Again, this was always the case, but they stated it, they restated it again, mm-hmm. and they want to make sure that any project that will be funded by Europe in Israel mm-hmm. does not include those occupied territories, and they want Israel to, or not only Israel, but every project that is applying for grant money to Horizon 2020 to promise in a way, or to state that it doesn't include occupied territories investment. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, okay, so this would probably cut down a couple of projects that are in the occupied territories. We know of some of them, like the Ahava mm-hmm. research company, which is actually a beauty product, but they pretend to have a research company, is based in the occupied territory. So they wouldn't be able to get some money. And there are a couple of other cases. But the most important thing is not so much the specific project that are in the occupied territories. The thing is, every Israeli project would have to start by saying, we promise that we don't have any money in the occupied territory, which just the sentence occupied territory is a problem for them. So mm-hmm. they don't want to have to say, we promise that we don't have any money in mm-hmm. the occupied territories, because they don't even want to have to admit international that they're occupied. So it's a very, I don't even know if the European Commission, when they were doing that, how deep trouble they were getting in, because it's not, Now, what do we do? Israel has threatened to get out of Horizon 2020, which would be beautiful, actually. But so, unfortunately, a lot of politicians, including John Kerry and Laurent Fabius, so the French and the American Ministry of Foreign Affairs, have written letters that are public letters to the European Commission saying, well, about Israel, this thing about the international law, maybe you could be more, you know,
flexible
about the text. And maybe unless somebody really, I mean, unless the grant proposal specifically state that it is the occupied territories, maybe you don't need to ask them to promise that, that they don't.
Don't be picky.
Don't be picky, exactly. And so, well, of course, at the same time, many, I would say, Palestine solidarity people, but not only that. I mean, this is about human rights also. So many just conscient people wrote the commission to say, no, you had this moment of truth, this moment of vision where you say you want to enforce the international law. Please do it. Please keep doing what you promised. And in this context, the academia is very much involved because many of those funding projects are research projects. And so this started in the academic world or scene. And there was a first petition with 800 European university academic people, research people that came out, that actually a new version of this letter was published yesterday, and many famous academics signed on it to enforce. But surprisingly, there was also, of course, there were 40 Palestinian organizations asking for this law to be complied. But there's also 50 European Member of Parliament that signed this petition or another petition. And maybe more surprisingly, 600 Israeli intellectuals wrote a letter asking Europe to keep with their ethical rules because they feel that, you know, it's better even for Israel to be accepted full-heartedly than, rather than by going through the back door and lying about what's in their project. So I don't know where this is going because, of course, John Kerry and Laurent Fabius are usually have more power than 800 European academics, 600 Israeli intellectuals and 50 European Member of Parliament. Again, at least we get some press coverage about it. And if in the end, Israeli projects get funded without complying to this international law, I guess it will be even more obvious and we will be able to denounce it more. But of course, it's not a won battle yet.
I want to just to remind our listeners, when we talk about these new EU guidelines, I think they were introduced this year in July, I think, this guideline that would say that any agreements between the EU and Israel has to explicitly exclude all occupied territory in 1967. So it includes West Bank, but it also includes East Jerusalem the Golan Heights,
in Gaza,
Syria.
Yeah.
So it's
And if we look at it carefully, and some people did, it was also in this article in Mondo Vice, almost, I mean, many other projects that are not based in the occupied territories include banks, for example, and those banks have funding in the occupied territories. So technically, even those projects should not be funded because part of it is in the occupied territory. So if you look at it really carefully, it would do a lot of harm to the Israeli-funded projects unless they comply with those guidelines, which just means complying with the international law. But
maybe to know if it's, like you say, if it's applied, maybe to know how damaging. Many politicians and public figures in Israel called it an earthquake, and they were really scared of this new guideline. So hopefully it would be applied.
Yeah, it is. It is billions of euros, which means, in retrospect, that Europe is giving millions, billions of euros to Israel on a not daily but yearly basis for its research. So it would be an earthquake, but it is an earthquake now that Europe is funding Israeli research so much. Then again, as often with the BDS campaign, it's not so much those billions of dollars, but or euros. It's the fact that Israel has to publicly admit that they have occupied territory and that they should be able to separate whatever they're doing in the legal territory mm-hmm. that could be disputed, but mm-hmm. at least it's legal under international law, and the totally illegal occupied territories where they are not allowed to make money out of. That's mm-hmm. very simple international law.
Mm-hmm. So I want to finish with Europe and come back to Montreal. You right now you are based in France and very active in France, but before that you used to live in Montreal and you were active in the Palestine Solidarity and the BDS. I don't know if you were active in the BDS at that time, but in the Palestine Solidarity activism mm-hmm. in general in Montreal. Can you compare the two scenes? I don't know, maybe is there difficulties you had there that you didn't have here or vice versa?
No, definitely it's easier here than it was in France. We have a lot more backlash in France. I mean, you were alluding before to the Israeli Apartheid Week. So, of course, it started in Canada. It started in Toronto. Mm-hmm. But in France, I didn't mention that, but we also have an academic boycott campaign, which is actually a total failure so far, because every time we want to organize an event in a university, it's censored, it's forbidden. They authorize it, and then at the last minute, they cancel it. Mm-hmm. So then again, total failure doesn't mean total failure, because we get a lot of support from intellectuals. We get petitions. That's actually how we got our largest article in a major daily paper in France, because mm-hmm. a lot of people supported the right for us to express, even people that were against boycott mm-hmm. and against the use of the word apartheid to describe the Israeli politics in Palestine. They said, well, okay, we disagree, but they should have the right to defend this in a debate at the university, and debate where some people may agree, some people may disagree. But so far, almost every event that we try to organize in France, in Paris, in other cities in France, were cancelled by the university authorities, even though they're free to theoretically, they're mm-hmm. free, but they receive so much pressure from, we hear from government officials, but definitely from community organization, from the CRIF, from the Zionist organizations, mm-hmm. etc. So I would say it's more difficult in France, but the fact that it's more difficult maybe is more exciting. I don't know. There's a lot more to
living on the edge.
Exactly. More people to convince. I mean, I don't want to simplify it with left and right, but in the Palestine solidarity movement that is very large in France, very diverse, very complicated for me to understand, even to grasp. There are very various origins, whether it's based from political parties or unions. Within this movement, those people are considered allies. Mm-hmm. It's hard to defend BDS. Some people are against BDS. Some people are against, or some people agree to boycott products from the Israeli occupied territories. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the Israeli, the Palestinian occupied territories, the mm-hmm. 1967 occupied territories, but they disagree to boycott Israeli product for various reasons. Some people say, okay, I can see why boycott is a good strategy, but you shouldn't touch culture and academia, as mm-hmm. I was saying before, because mm-hmm. supposedly those fields are above politics, which we know is not true, and which we can prove it's not true. So there's a lot of debate, and I think we're also making progress in that respect. Another thing is those organizations have leaders, and often the leaders for some reasons, for various historical reasons, have arguments against the boycott. But the members of those organizations, they usually understand what we're saying. And so there's a young generation that we count on more. So, mm-hmm. It's hard in France, but I have hopes. I see the younger generation being more open, more aware of international solidarity movement. They're less glued in those old political parties in France that have their history and have their connection to Israeli parties that they keep faithful to, and it's difficult. So, again, I don't want to oversimplify it on ethnic grounds, but France has a large Jewish communities and a large Arab community and a large immigrant community in general, who understands what colonization means. Mm-hmm. And that makes the debate pretty interesting in France, mm-hmm. I feel.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. Thank you very much, Dror, for being with us today. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay, brief stay in Montreal.
Thank you for the invitation.
So many years of catastrophe, more than 6 million refugees. It could be you and your family, forced from your home and your history.
We are the people and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
To your faith or community, this is a crime against humanity. Gaza turned into a prison camp. Apartheid war divides the West Bank.
We are the people and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
We'll break down the wall. Freedom for Palestine. Demand justice.
Illegal occupation, violence and racial segregation. All religious communities unite.
Freedom is a human right.
We are the people and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
We'll break down the wall. Freedom for Palestine. Demand justice.
Locked, locked like a box you're locked in. A classroom, bombs are dropped in, and the pain is locked in. Shame on this brave new world you're lost in. And the lies is costing like a toxin, a penetration of hate. Generations later, still boxed in. Children dead cause we're led by the bigoted. Small grace filled instead, and I'm sick of it.
We are good people and this is our time. Stand up, sing out for Palestine.
We'll break down the wall. Freedom for Palestine. Demand justice.
Justice in Palestine.
So we were listening to a song called Freedom for Palestine. The song was written and produced by the composer and producer Dave Randall from the famous British band Faithless. Dave decided to create this song after he went himself to West Bank and saw the occupation and the apartheid system imposed on Palestinians. So many artists participated in the song. The goal at that time was to have a Palestine solidarity song into the UK music charts. The song raised a lot of attention, and even the famous other famous British band Coldplay shared it on their Facebook page. The song eventually succeeded in its mission, and by July 2011, it was placed at number 10 on the Indies UK charts. That's it for us for today. Thank you very much for joining in. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. My name is Sausan Kadura and I was your host for today. Before I go, I'd like to remind you to visit us on our Facebook page. You can look for Under the Olive Tree CKUT or just go directly to the link facebook.com/uot.ckut. Thank you again for listening. Make sure to join me again next week, same time, same place. And until then, I wish you a free, free Palestine.